I'm Martin Tyler, and you're listening to Harry Simeon.
Hey everybody, how are we doing? Welcome back to the Chronicles of Aguna, the Arsenal podcast, part of the 90 Min Football Network. As ever, I'm your host, Harry Simeon, and on this edition of the show, we're going to be looking back at the first three episodes of the All or Nothing documentary. I've had quite a few messages over the last few days, and every time I see friends and family and a few people at the Arsenal game asked me the other day as well, the first question I'm seeming to get at the moment is, so what do you think of the doc? So I thought we'd put it into an episode. I was going to do an episode of reaction to every episode, but I don't really think that's necessary. I think we can do it weekly, and I think we can sort of cover across all three of the first episodes anyway on this one edition of the podcast. But what I really want in this one is I want to hear from you guys. I want it to be a really interactive show. I want you guys to put in comments on the bits and pieces that I'm going to discuss. And I want to go back and forward with you guys in the live chat. I think this is a really good subject to kind of go back and forward on. I think it's a really good subject to exchange thoughts on. And often, you know, you can see or read somebody else's interpretation of something and it can make you think twice about yours. And I think that's good. I think it's healthy. I think it's good to discuss these things. Obviously, happy Sunday to everybody that is watching us live. Happy Sunday to those that are watching this back on Sunday. If you're watching or listening to it on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, whatever, big hello to you guys as well. So, the All or Nothing doc. Well, I guess my fears about this when we first heard that Arsenal were involved, that Arsenal were doing this, was it's going to come across a little bit cringe. In the way that there were cringe moments in the City one, there were cringe moments in the Spurs one. What I hoped it wouldn't be is a PR piece solely for the manager, because I thought Tottenham's really went in that direction. Whether they intended for that to happen or not, I don't know. But obviously, it kind of picked up from when Jose Mourinho took over from Pochettino. He didn't really get much on the sacking or the reaction to that. And it went into the Mourinho era. And I felt it was sort of centered around painting a different picture of Jose Mourinho, this changed man who doesn't fall out with his players, isn't as prickly and as spiky as he was earlier on in his career, a reformed character after being sacked from Manchester United, and ultimately, whether Spurs fans like this or not, I don't really care, but ultimately having to downgrade in terms of the size of club that he was managing, in terms of their ability to challenge for the very biggest prizes. And I thought it was very centered around Jose Mourinho. And I hoped that this one wouldn't be solely centered around Mikel Arteta. So far, I think a lot of it is based around Mikel Arteta more than I probably would have liked. But I think where the two situations differ is here. When Jose Mourinho took over Spurs, to Spurs fans, it was, this is our lucky day. We finally got a winning manager. We finally got a manager who's going to come in and bring the right mentality to the football club so that we can go on and challenge and hopefully win trophies. At Arsenal, it was really different because Arsene Wenger went and everybody kind of wanted that by the time it got to that point. Everybody accepted and acknowledged that, you know, it was the end of the road for Arsene and he was moved on. Then Unai Emery came in and I think the first 12 months were okay. Was willing to give him the benefit of the doubt for the first 12 months. But you started to worry after 8-9 months when you couldn't see any identity. You know, the signings didn't make sense. The signings were being dictated by other people within the club. And you just felt that there was no cohesion. There was no connection in everything that was happening. But then Mikel Arteta got appointed and Mikel Arteta split opinion. You know, this is not a guy with any experience at managerial level prior to taking over Arsenal. It's a guy who is very highly talked about and very highly thought of as an assistant, but that was it. He came in, thought he spoke really, really well right at the beginning of his tenure. We won the FA Cup in that half season in which he was in charge. And I think the level of expectation went up maybe more than it should have because we were able to get over the line in those two games in particular, the semi-final against Manchester City and then the final of the cup against Chelsea. The expectation never went up. And then the next season really, really underwhelmed. And last season, you know, things were looking good after the opening three games, of course, overall anyway. There were bumpy patches. There were bumps in the road, but it looked good, you know, moving forward. And then obviously the disappointment of missing out on the top four sparked and prompted questions about Mikel Arteta again, not from everybody, but from quite a significant proportion of the fan base. And I think that unlike the Mourinho situation, where he needed the PR to kind of show himself in a slightly different light, but there was no question around his competency as a manager because of all that he'd done before and all that he'd achieved in the past. I think with Arsenal, though, you know, Mikel Arteta needs it. And I think that's probably largely why it's gone in this direction so far. How has he come across, Mikel Arteta, in the first three episodes? I think he's come across quite well. You know, I think there are certain things that you can look at and you can say, well, maybe that's a bit, or it's come across as a bit condescending. Maybe it's a bit school teacher-like in the way he puts certain messages across. But what you get, I think, from the first three episodes is that this is a guy who cares deeply about being successful with Arsenal Football Club. This is a guy who has very strong morals, very strong values, and he's going to do his utmost to get that across, you know, as a football manager to his players. I think in the first three episodes where we cover, obviously, the beginning of the season, which wasn't very good, and then, you know, the little section, the three episodes end after, obviously, that really disappointing game at Anfield. I think one of the takeaways from it is that maybe Mikel Arteta was a bit naive at times. And maybe, you know, we should have expected that. We should have known that was coming, given, as I talk about, his inexperience previously. So I don't think we should be surprised by the fact that there's a few moments in there that I think from the outside looking in, you think maybe that's a bit naive. And I think it's always really easy to sit there and criticize with hindsight. So I don't want to do too much of that either. You know, we talked about it at the time. Did Mikel Arteta incite the crowd at Anfield that night where we got battered to the point where he got them going after Arsenal had been really competitive? And was Mikel Arteta's actions to blame for the way the pendulum swung at Anfield, for the atmosphere, which he talked so much about? I think in hindsight, you can probably say, yeah. I think in hindsight, you can say, actually, Mikel did sort of rise to Jurgen Klopp, you know, on a bit of a wind-up, knew exactly what he was doing. And that did galvanize the crowd, and that did create the atmosphere that Mikel Arteta had been talking about prior to the game. But the reality is that that atmosphere wasn't there before. Arsenal were competitive, and Anfield is not as intimidating as Mikel Arteta's put it across. I feel like his mistake in the lead-up to that game was overplaying that to the point where it would have played on the players' minds a lot more than it might have done under normal circumstances. You go to Anfield, you know that if the crowd get behind them, it can be a very atmospheric place and it can be a difficult place to play football. I'm not denying that for a second. But the way Mikel Arteta built it up for me almost made it a bigger issue than it needed to be and made it something that would play on the players' minds going into the game when really what they needed to focus on was being competitive. What they needed to focus on was leaving their all on the pitch, and what they needed to focus on was the tactical elements of how they could stop Liverpool. I've also seen people being critical of some of Mikel Arteta's team talks. Let me just say this. I've said it on Twitter, but let me just say this right here on the podcast. You are not going to get tactical insight on this thing. You are not going to get broken down videos of what Mikel Arteta sets his team out to do. That is not going to happen. That is revealing too much. And remember, the club in these things have ultimate editorial control. So, you know, don't expect that. Don't think that when he's drawing diagrams of hearts and brains, that that's all that goes on. You know, the tactical preparation will be done before the game. The tactical preparation will be done in the week leading up to the game. And the tactical preparation is not what you put across to the players just before they go out on the field of play. So, you know, that's something to bear in mind. But as I say, I think looking back at that Liverpool situation, I think he did overplay the Anfield atmosphere. And I think he made it more of an issue than it probably needed to be. Nuno Tavares was obviously somebody that was really highlighted in that part of the documentary. You know, he made a couple of mistakes that night, and you know, it was a decision that Mikel Arteta took before the game to keep him in the side ahead of Kieran Tierney, but he'd done well up until that point. So I'm not going to go back and say, oh, Mikel got it horribly wrong by playing Nuno Tavares. I think that a lot of us would have picked Tierney on the night, but a lot of us were like, well, you know, he's done okay. And, you know, he deserves to stay in the team. And again, hindsight is a wonderful thing, and it's really easy to be critical with hindsight. But that's, you know, I always think that whatever you thought at the time is probably the way you should judge something. You know, yeah, you can say in the end it was wrong, but you know, to beat somebody up over something that you at the time thought was a reasonable decision, I think is a little bit unfair. Interesting the way they highlighted Nuno Tavares. Interesting the way they sort of honed in on him. Of course, you know, Mikel Arteta was captured saying, look, we need to get more communication out of Nuno. You know, we need to understand him a little bit more. We need to create an environment whereby he can feel like he's able to say what he needs to say and express his issues and get them across. And it's good to see that Arsenal took notice of that. And it then takes you back to a bit where Mikel Arteta said, you know, a famous Spanish coach once said that players are just numbers and I don't see them like that. I need to understand them. I need to understand them as people. And that gives me confidence that Mikel Arteta's heart, at least, is in the right place. You know, people have been quite quick to criticize some of his man management over the years. People have said that he isn't able to maintain relationships with players, struggles with that, maybe is a little bit condescending, as I've mentioned earlier on, and that grinds people's gears. I don't know. But it was interesting to see the approach with Nuno Tavares. It was also interesting to see Edu's exchange with Steve Round. I think it was in the canteen or whatever, when he said, you know, and this was after we kind of turned the ship around a little bit and started to get some results after the first three games. He said, look, I can see Mikel is in a much better mood. I can see Mikel is much more relaxed, much more positive, is in among the players, is having conversations with them, and is a lot more involved in the group. And Edu said, you know, again, I'm paraphrasing, right? Those of you that have seen the documentary will know exactly what I'm talking about. But Edu kind of said something to the effect of, you know, I always knew that this guy was tactically on point. I always knew that he understood football. I always knew that his heart was in the right place, his morals were in the right place, and that he has a great football brain. But I've always kind of said that the minute he can build on those relationships with the players, the better things will be. And it was almost as though Edu kind of, you know, revealed that even above, when it looked like Arsenal were giving Mikel Arteta all the support and all the backing in the world, they were well aware of what his shortcomings were in the early days of his tenure. They were well aware of what they believed to be the problems between Mikel Arteta and some of the rest of the team. So, yeah, I mean, really, really interesting to get that insight as well. I've got to say, some of the conversations in the canteen between Bukayo Saka particularly and some of the other lads have made me laugh. I mean, it's just, I don't know, you just don't think those conversations happen in football clubs, but they do. They're people, they're men. And yeah, it's just, it's nice to see that side of it as well, the relaxed side of it. Sticking with the third episode, I know I feel like I'm focusing a lot on the third episode, but I feel like the third episode was the one where we started to get a bit more insight. I felt like one and two were kind of setups for the rest of the series, you know, setting the scene of how the season started, how disappointing it was, how difficult it was for Arsenal to get over the line, etc., etc. But there was another bit in the third episode. I think it was it after... What game was it? I'm just trying to think. Leicester? I think it might have been Leicester. Was it Leicester? Where Mikel Arteta did that whole exercise, you know, hold hands, rub your hands together, transmit the energy between you, blah, blah, blah. And while you're doing that, I'm going to tell you exactly how the game's going to go. What I found really interesting was when the players came back in, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang gets the microphone in the changing room and says, I'd like to say something if Mikel will allow me. Now, obviously, at the time, Aubameyang was the captain of the team, and as a manager, you know, as a manager, I'm sitting there going, well, my captain, wants to show a bit of leadership, wants to take ownership, by all means, go for it. And then what Aubameyang does is, and you don't know how this was meant, right? You don't know what his intentions were at the time. But he kind of says, you know, close your eyes, guys, rub your hands together. It comes across in a way like he's kind of mocking what Mikel Arteta did. And as soon as I saw that, I kind of like my eyes went like sort of, I opened even more and I kind of really honed in on Mikel Arteta's reaction to that. And he's jumping up and down and he's smiling and he's joining in with the joke. And Aubameyang goes on to say, you know, two days off, whatever it is they're chanting. I just wonder if that got under Mikel Arteta's skin. He didn't show it in the changing room, but I just wonder if he thought, hold on a minute, mate, you're taking the piss here. I just wonder about that. Like, was that a moment that Mikel Arteta kind of grinned and bared it, but really wasn't too amused by, wasn't too pleased by? I don't know. I don't think his reaction in the changing room gave anything away, but I wouldn't be surprised if he came away from that thinking, And if that was then in his mind when things started to get worse with Aubameyang and ultimately he was stripped of the captaincy, which I'm hoping we're going to see, you know, in the next episode. A couple of other people that come out of the first three episodes with a lot of credit. I think Carlos Cuesta, I think, looks a really good person to have around. And there have been rumors this week, and I don't know if this is just because of the Amazon doc, that there are clubs out there looking at him as a potential manager. Very young, seems to be very good at bringing himself to player level and understanding people. And Nuno Tavares speaks about that. He talks about the fact that Carlos Cuesta, was able to kind of relate to him, and that helps having those types of people in the squad. And I think you need people within your staff that can do that, because as a manager, you can't be everybody's best friend. You can't be everybody's shoulder to cry on. You have to maintain a level of authority that probably doesn't give people the impression that they can speak to you completely openly all of the time. And so I think it's really important to have people like that within the setup. Carlos Cuesta, I read earlier today, speaks about 6-7 languages, which means that he can kind of relate to those players on an even deeper level by speaking to them in their mother tongue. We know that Mikel Arteta is bilingual as well, and that's great. Multilingual, I should say. I think that's really important when you have such an international squad. Just going back before I move on to that point about Aubameyang's kind of reaction, and Aubameyang's, was it a mocking of what Arteta did pre-game? I don't know. A few of you have got a sort of opinion on that, and I just want to share them in the chat. Jay says Aubameyang was trying to undermine him a bit. I don't think Arteta liked that. I kind of agreed. Amira says that Tom highlighted that as one of the points that might have showed Aubameyang undermining his authority. Steve Stone says Tom also picked up on this. I didn't get that impression myself. Interesting. Maybe I'm reading a little bit too into it because I know what comes next, because we know how that situation panned out. Johan says Arteta probably didn't think that at the time, but looking back before making the decision to remove him as captain, I'm sure this played a part on his mind. Steven says Aubameyang started to think he was bigger than his boots, in my opinion. And interestingly, he was dropped after that, wasn't he? And that was because the team wasn't performing when we then went through that difficult run of results. It wasn't, I'm not going to sit here and say it was because of that, but he did get dropped after. And you know, that's interesting. Amira says, responding to Steve's comment, who says, I didn't get that impression myself. Amira says, I didn't either the first time I watched it because of Arteta and the others' reaction. But imagine if you were the boss and one of your employers did that in front of everyone else. It's a good point. Owen Young says, wasn't a fan of the Oba thing. Paul James says, Harry, I think you're reading too much into what Aubameyang did. He's always been a joker. Maybe. And again, my view on this is probably influenced by the fact that I know what comes next. I'm well aware of that. I just think, you know, if he wanted to make the joke of, you know, we got 2 days off now, he wanted to celebrate that, wanted to do something, he could have done it in another way. One Nation says that Arteta could have been insecure regarding Aubameyang's comments because he's inexperienced. Maybe, maybe. Jay says, why did they completely skip the Palace and Brighton draws? Mate, they've got 9 episodes. They can't cover every single game, so you're going to get that. I wouldn't read too much into that, if I'm honest, because they do show difficult moments. It's not as if they've glossed over all the bad games. You know, they've glossed over all the defeats and draws and only focused on victories. They haven't done that at all. If anything, they've probably spent more time on the struggles than the successes. So, yeah, again, you know, it's 9 episodes. There's only so much you can fit into the final edit, I guess. And they would have got hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of footage together before making this. So, yeah, a few people have taken a bit of an issue with Mikel Arteta's diagrams, some of his speeches. What I take away from them is, look, he's trying to be motivational. He's clearly done a lot of research, clearly done a lot of reading on sort of motivational techniques, trying to think a little bit outside of the box. And I'm okay with that. I don't have a problem with his team talks. I don't have a problem with most of it. What I like is that most of the time, the majority of the time, he's willing to apply context even when it's easy to fly off the handle. Like the Everton game, when the teams went back in the changing room, Ramsdale comes in and he's throwing his things around and he's moaning about the fact that we had to throw in and we didn't go long and we ultimately ended up losing the game. And he said something to the effect of, this is so naive. And he's spot on. It was. Mikel Arteta walks in the changing room, I think, and reads the room. I think he realizes that the players are already down, the players are already low, and that certain people within his group have already vocalized their opinions and have made it clear that what just happened out there was not acceptable. Sometimes as a manager, you need to look at players, understand, you know, where they are mentally in terms of, you know, has the penny dropped? You don't always need to tell someone something that is blatantly obvious. And sometimes silence can be just as powerful. And I actually thought what Mikel did when he walked in and he said, I prefer not to say something I'm going to regret, so I'm not going to say much, and walks away. I think that's really powerful. I do. And I think sometimes as a manager, you need that. Sometimes you need to vary it up between giving people the hairdryer treatment and giving them time on their own to think and process what has just happened. Only when you think and process something yourself do you truly learn it, I think, anyway. All right, so I'll give you an example, nothing to do with football, and a very general example. I'm not even going to give you a specific example. But, you know, it's like when you were growing up, right? Sometimes your parents used to tell you stuff and you used to think, oh, just stop moaning, like just stop complaining. I know I used to have that. You know, they'd say, oh, don't do this or don't do that or come on. And I'd be like, oh, just get off my case. And then as you get older, and when you get into that situation yourself, you then realize something is not good for you and you then stop it. But sometimes you need to realize it yourself. And I think as a manager, it's important to find that balance between, as I say, giving people the hairdryer treatment, but also letting people understand situations themselves and letting them process it themselves. And that way you'll never forget it. You know, you can forget one of the rants that the manager had in the changing room, but you won't forget that sinking feeling you have yourself. And sometimes that realization on your own can be much, much more powerful. And I think that Mikel Arteta was spot on with that. But, you know, there are still moments where you look at him and you think, does this guy walk into the changing room and command the authority that some of the elder statesmen do? So your Carlo Ancelotti's, your Pep Guardiola's, your Antonio Conte's even, your Thomas Tuchel's, your Jurgen Klopp's. These guys have been there and done it. They've been there and won it. And when they walk into a changing room, I think that there is a real aura that they bring in with them. And I can't dig Mikel Arteta out for that, because you're not gonna have that at the start of your managerial career. And so what you need is people that are on board. What you need is people that are fully invested in what you're doing. And any dissenting voices when you already are on the journey or on the path to building that authority are unhelpful, unwanted, and can cause you problems. So that's where I'm at on sort of Mikel Arteta and his aura in the changing room. Also, though, again, I'm mindful of the fact that we haven't seen all of it and we don't know exactly what goes on. We've only seen snippets that we've been given access to. Let's try and draw some conclusions from them, but always be open to the fact that there could be a lot more that we're just unaware of. But I do think that probably nowadays, as opposed to the start of last season, he does carry a bit more clout in the dressing room. I think having removed those players that I was talking about, the dissenting voices, the authoritative voices that maybe at times aren't always 100% on board, I think we're in a better place now. And there's more players that are invested. There's more players that want to make things happen. And that's what you want. And I think over the course of the next few episodes, you're going to understand Granit Xhaka's role in the changing room. And even if you still don't rate him, still don't like him, you're going to respect him a little bit more. Good to see that little feature with Kieran Tierney. Really, really enjoyed that part. I thought that was really, really good. Good insight into him and some of the struggles that he faced when he first came down to London. You know, we just assume that you're a Premier League footballer. You've got your own private chef. You've got tons and tons of money coming in on a weekly basis, that all is rosy and all is right. And it's not, you know, it's not always that simple. So, yeah, good to see that. There was a little bit on Smith Rowe I enjoyed. There was a bit on Saka that I enjoyed as well. I quite like the Ramsdale feature as well. The bit about his family, I mean, it's nice and all that, but was it really necessary? Like, I'm not really fussed about his mum and dad sort of shouting from the sidelines. I found the Thierry Henry bits interesting. There's a few bits in there where Thierry Henry speaking, you know, being winning or at least challenging to win is part of Arsenal's DNA. I agree with all of that. But I also think it's really easy to say from Thierry Henry's position. And yeah, you kind of need that to a degree to make sure that the standards around the football club are maintained. But I also think that, you know, it can bring an unnecessary pressure at a time when everybody sensible recognizes that there is a transitional phase going on. And so I think you got to have that within the club, but you've got to, I don't know what the word is here. You've got to monitor how much of that is coming across, and you've got to, I think, not let it override what you're doing. Everybody knows that this is a team developing, particularly at the time period that we're talking about now, right? This is not about today. We're talking about the start of last season, you know, leading up to Christmas last season. So what you need to do is, as much as you want those people giving you that kind of motivation and trying to drum the standards and what Arsenal Football Club is all about into you, you also need to accept that you are moving through a transitional phase, and that sometimes the pressure can be a hindrance more than a motivation, more than an inspiration. I think that's really important. Let's take a few more of your comments. Paul says, we're only seeing a tiny part of what happened over the season. All or Nothing has been edited, so it gets people talking. It's not all diagrams and speeches. We won't see the coaching that takes place. Absolutely. And P says, saying that I lost 5-0 at Liverpool in my career was the worst thing he could have said before the game. Yeah, I wouldn't have said that if I were in the changing room. If I were the manager, it's probably not something I would have wanted to boast about. But I think his approach or his thinking behind that was, I want to make you guys feel comfortable. I want to share with you guys my regret as a player. The thing that I think back to when I think of my time as a player, so that you can hopefully seize the moment and not make that mistake. I think that was the intention behind it, but agreed. I don't think it works. But then in fairness, after the game, like, for example, you know, Nuno Tavares come out of that game with a lot of criticism. And I liked when Mikel said, look, any mistakes, it's on me. You know, I'll take those mistakes, those individual mistakes, and I'll put them in the bin, he said, something along those lines. As if to say, I'm not going to judge you. I'm not going to eliminate you from my plans. I'm not going to hold you in any different regard because of that. And I thought that that was nice, but there's a fine line. You know, on the one hand, you want players to feel comfortable that they can go out and express themselves and that they do have a manager in their corner who's fighting for them, who's defending them. But at the same time, you don't want to relieve them of all pressure to perform, because that's not how you breathe high performance on a regular basis. So again, it's all about finding the right balances. And I think these are things, particularly at the start of last season, that Mikel Arteta was still trying to work out for himself. Tommy Hearn says, I'm enjoying Arteta's passion. Daniel says, I love how the heart and brain both had feet. Yeah, that was great, wasn't it? Jay says that if Arteta does get the sack one day, he's got a job lined up at CBBC, drawing for kids at least. One Nation says that when Arteta played, you'll never walk alone at training. That was crazy. It's good optics, but it doesn't underlie the issue of players lacking self-belief. Yeah, and again, it's a manager finding his feet. It's a manager trying to learn his trade and trying to find his management style. When you've never been a manager before, you know, you will experiment. You will try things. On this occasion, it didn't work. And I've spoken on recent podcasts about the fact that actually it's quite embarrassing that we did that and then went and got thumped. But what I would say is that, and I said this yesterday, I think on the Palace review, is that it at least highlights that there is a much deeper level of preparation. That there is much more thought going into the game, that Mikel Arteta does, along with his staff, sit there and think, okay, what are the big factors that could decide the outcome of this game? And how do we try and mitigate the effect that those factors will have? So, yeah, anyway. Dromega says, great performance yesterday, Harry. You batted up Virgil van Dijk real good. Hats off. For those of you that don't know, I'm often referred to as an Alexander Mitrovic lookalike. He had a great game yesterday. Tom says, on Arteta, I just want to see that he's improving and learning his mistakes. Some of it was cringeworthy, but he has changed the mindset and his players love him. What else have we got? Some of you saying that Aaron Ramsdale's dad was quite funny, actually. What else have we got? Chris Yakubiak says, I'd be interested to see how people who dislike his diagrams would be able to put across their plan to a group of people who speak about 8 different languages and haven't all completed school. I think that's a good point. I think that putting something across visually can help. I think sort of from training courses I've been on over the years, one of the things that you take away is that some people learn by being told. Some people learn by experiencing. Some people learn visually. And I think by thinking carefully about your words and also having the diagram, you're ultimately ticking off more of the boxes in terms of how players take in information. Lots of managers use diagrams. All right, maybe not kiddie sort of like diagrams of hearts and brains and all of that business. But, you know, diagrams are a big part of getting your point across as a manager, as a coach. I quite like the that leads me on to remember the part where he sat the guys down in the room and showed them 2 formational diagrams and said, you know, look at this and try and remember it, and how that when you're comfortable with that, you can then understand how the game is going to play out, and therefore you feel more comfortable in everything you do and more comfortable in your decision making. He led it back to that point about making the right decisions. Or the ability to make the right decisions is enhanced when you understand the game model. I think that was a really good point. This is a great point from Christoph. He says, I remember seeing at the end of the Spurs match and wondering why Mikel was pointed towards the team photographer while still on the pitch. Having seen the locker room scene now, it all made sense now. I'm exactly the same as you. I remember at that game watching Mikel Arteta sort of turn towards the North Bank and point at him and being like, you know, like kind of this is on him. And I also remember thinking like, what did he take a nice photo or something? But yeah, as you say, it all makes sense now. Terence sees it a little bit differently, referring back to Mikel Arteta's comments pre the game at Anfield. Look, I agree with you, and I said a few minutes ago that I don't think it's the way I would have done it. But I, you know, did he convey that it was all right to lose to Liverpool 5-0 and that it's expected? I don't think so. Actually, his team went out there and were very competitive for the first 30, 35 minutes, which suggests to me that he got them in the right headspace going into the game. The problem was that once things started to go against us a little bit, we switched off from a set piece. Mikel Arteta's exchange with Jurgen Klopp obviously incited the crowd. I guess what I would say is that actually he didn't cover all bases, rather than he put across the wrong message is what I would say. Mr. Waffle also agrees with Terence on the approach pre-Liverpool. He should have encouraged the players at Liverpool beatable. I agree. That's what I would have done. I think you need to breed confidence. And I think the fact, as I've said before, that he spent the whole week talking about the atmosphere almost planted that seed in people's minds that this was going to be a really fucking tough game when he didn't really need to go that deep. What else have we got? Chris Yakubiak says, hear what you're saying about elder statesman managers commanding respect. But Harry, who in the current Arsenal squad doesn't love Arteta? The oldest is Xhaka, who adores him. Yeah, but that's now. That's today. We're referring back to the period in which the documentary was captured. And I think that at that time, there was people in and around the club that probably didn't want to be there. Probably shouldn't have been there. Are not there now, but they were at the time. You know, there's a lot of players. You know, there's a lot of players. Aubameyang, you know, will he automatically get respect from Lacazette? I don't think we've seen anything from Lacazette that suggests that he was a problem behind the scenes. But you know, he's an experienced footballer. And now we've got less of them. We've got more of Mikel Arteta's disciples, shall we call them. That means that the dressing room is going to be more in tandem with one another, is going to be more united, I think, because there's less ideologies. And, you know, even if you don't always agree with an ideology, the more ideologies you have, the more complicated things get. And so if everybody is singing from the same hymn sheet, then at least what's intended, what's planned, and what the guys are looking to go out and execute is consistent. And I think that's so important in the development of a team. Stilton Avenger says, I've not seen anything from Xhaka yet. Still hoping to see some of that leadership that the managers in the past have seen in him. I think you will see that a little bit later on in the series. Justin says, I enjoyed the first few episodes. It still amazes me how far we came last year after a really horrible start. Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing, isn't it? Like, people don't always realize how many things are going wrong behind the scenes that ultimately put you in a place where you're going out and losing football matches. Like, what I'm trying to say is there's so many moving parts. There's so many factors that probably need addressing and need improving. So it isn't always easy to turn around the ship. If you think about a massive cruiser ship, you don't just turn it around in 10 seconds. To spin the whole thing around, it takes time. It takes a lot of effort. It takes patience. And you can compare that to the situation at Arsenal Football Club, I think. Love this from Amandeep, who says Spurs are so small that the club photographer was enough to beat them. Just going back to the you'll never walk alone thing. A lot of people are homing in on this. Amira says the you'll never walk alone thing seemed like a good idea, but it was badly executed. It's done quite a bit in NFL. And I think, let's be honest, if we had drawn or won that game, it would have been seen as genius. I've said that before. I think it's one of those things where he tried to think outside the box. On this occasion, it didn't work. Nobody knew anything about it. Obviously, it's out now and people are going to use it to poke fun. But as you say, had we got the result, it would have been seen as a masterstroke. And the way things are perceived is very different when the outcome is different. Christoph says, the less complex a diagram is, the more easily we are able to assimilate the data or message. Williams highlights the Aubameyang thing that we talked about a little bit earlier on. We've already done that bit. But yeah, you're right to highlight it. Paul James says, we then went back to Anfield and drew 0-0. Lesson learned. It's a great point. We did in the cup. Yeah, you know, we certainly gave a much better account of ourselves that night. And perhaps taking this group through that difficult game the first time, obviously we didn't intend to lose, or we didn't intend to get overrun or overwhelmed or battered in the end. But, you know, as I said earlier, some people need to be told something. Others need to visually see it. And others need to experience something before they learn from it. And I think, you know, when it comes to football, that particular side of it is incredibly important. What else have we got? Johan says, I think Arteta wanted to share his past mistakes at Liverpool as a learning experience for the players, to basically say, don't make the same mistakes I did. I think that was the intention for sure. Mr. Waffle said, when Xhaka said to ESR, you're one for the future, and ESR said, I'm one for now, not the future. I don't think Xhaka's comment was meant like that. I think what Xhaka was trying to say is, you're Arsenal now, you're also Arsenal's future. Like, you're the number 10, you're a starter, you're the future. It wasn't meant to say, he wasn't meaning to say, oh, you know, you're not important now, you're one for the future. That wasn't how I took it anyway. Dromega says, I would like to see a little more from the supporting roles from around the club. I find Carlos Cuesta an interesting character. Remember the Man City kit men. We need more hype men. You know what I would do? I would just put Frimpong in the dressing room. Frimpong that you've seen on the Arsenal videos, social media, etc. He is the ultimate hype man. I would just put him in there, if I'm being honest. Let's see. Lots of you still talking about the You'll Never Walk Alone thing. It's such a big sort of takeaway from this documentary, isn't it? It really, really is. But I guess those are kind of my main thoughts from the first three episodes. Again, look, I've enjoyed it. I have enjoyed it. I thought the third episode was the most fascinating, the best one so far. And that's why I've pretty much focused on that, because the other one I feel like was almost setting the scene for what was to come. The other two, I beg your pardon, were setting the scene for what was to come. But yeah, hopefully we get a little bit more insight. And I'm really, really looking forward to the next three. I'm really looking forward to seeing how Arsenal put across the Aubameyang situation from their perspective. I don't think they're going to give us a lot. I don't think it's going to be groundbreaking. But I think, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how they put that across and what their side of events are, what their version of events are. I think there's obviously a sort of a responsibility, though, not to go too deep. You know, what happens behind closed doors happens behind closed doors. I know the idea of these behind closed doors series is to give everybody as much insight as possible. But I still think as a football club, there are certain things that don't go out into the ether and shouldn't go out into the open. And I don't think that every word exchanged between Mikel Arteta and Aubameyang, or every detail of that particular falling out, needs to be put out. I don't think it's helpful for Arsenal. And the reason I don't think it's helpful is because there are people out there who are anti-Mikel Arteta as it is. And I think if they read it the wrong way, if they read it in a different way to maybe the way the club saw things, that could have a real negative effect on Arteta and ramp up the pressure on him when things aren't going well. So if I were Arsenal Football Club, I'd want to put across as little as possible. People can speculate, but it's nothing more than that, just pure speculation. The moment you start giving them more, that moment can change things for you as a manager in terms of the fan perception as well. And I think we've just got to a place now where the perception of Mikel Arteta is a lot better. There's a lot more support. I mean, I was at Crystal Palace on Friday night. The atmosphere in that away end was incredible, and every single person was invested and was very, very supportive. And I don't think as a football club, we should put ourselves in a situation where we're leaking out stuff or putting out stuff that can even that even run the risk of creating another negative narrative. We don't need that. People talk about PR a lot and they say, oh, this is just a PR move. This is. Of course, every big corporation engages in PR. Arsenal Football Club are no different. Do what other big organizations do and show yourselves in the best light possible. It's not, you know, Sean Collins says, so you will hide the truth, Harry. It's not. It's a private matter that doesn't need to be made public, in my opinion. If Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang was to have sat down and given an interview in which he went really big and really sort of shifted all of the blame and pushed it all onto Mikel Arteta, I'd say the club need to respond. The club need to put out their side of it, their side of the truth, so that they can balance the narrative here. But Aubameyang hasn't. He hasn't said anything. He hasn't done anything. He hasn't come out and been critical of Arteta. In fact, he's put things up on social media highlighting, you know, how fond his memories are of Arsenal Football Club and his time there. So I just don't think there's a need to go and stir it all up and bring it all to the fore again. You know, ultimately, what's done is done. Aubameyang's gone. Leave it as it is. That's my opinion. What else have we got? Elliot Roberts says it was great to see how All or Nothing shows how far Saka has come as a player and a young man, and how Arsenal will reap the benefits from the unfortunate Euro penalty saga. Completely agree. What else have we got? Mr. Waffle says the PR is to give Arteta more time. Well, I mean, let's be honest. The PR around Jose Mourinho in his one was obviously to make him look like the right appointment and the right decision and the right coach and the right man to take Spurs forward. And we all know that that wasn't the case. It all went sour very, very quickly. Arsenal are not going to hold on to Mikel Arteta because of an All or Nothing documentary. All of these things are designed to show their clubs, their people in the best light possible. And if you don't accept that and understand that and process that before you watch it, then of course you're going to be disappointed and you're going to be frustrated. And then you're going to go, oh my God, it's just PR. But what did you expect when you turned it on? When you turned on All or Nothing, what did you expect? Did you expect Arsenal Football Club with editorial control around this piece, the final say on this piece, to show themselves in a bad light? When you put a picture of yourself up on Instagram, do you put the picture in which you look the worst? Or do you put the picture in which you look the best? Everybody on social media, which is ultimately personal PR, wants to put themselves in the best light possible. Do you post about all of your struggles? No, you don't. Sometimes you want to show a vulnerable side. Yes, and that can be beneficial. But ultimately, you want to come out of the experience and out of the action looking in the best way possible. That's what you do. And that the football club is no different. And if you expect it to be different, then you're going to watch this and you're just going to get frustrated and angry with yourself. If you understand what it is before you watch it, you can make your sort of your theories. You can put together your conclusions, as I've done. But ultimately, I know that that's all with the caveat of I'm only seeing a small fraction of what goes on behind the scenes. Anyway, right, going to leave it there. Thank you all so much. For those of you that are watching this a little bit later on, please do leave me your thoughts in the comments section below. I'd love to hear from you. If you're listening on audio format, do tweet us at @Chronicles_AFC. Make sure you leave a like on the video. And make sure you have subscribed to the channel if you haven't done so already. There's nowhere near enough likes on this video so far, but hopefully we'll get there between now and the end of the broadcast. I'll catch you all very soon. Until next time, take care. Goodbye.
I'm Martin Tyler, and you're listening to Harry Simeon.